very much.
Okay.
Which we should.
Welcome to the Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We bring issues of the day that affect our community. My name is Emily O'Hare, and I am today serving as Dick's voice. He has laryngitis, but he is here. So I'm here with co-hosts Dick Paddock and Larry Hoyt. And today, Lori will be having a conversation with our guest, Reverend Michelle Laws.
Okay, thank you so much, Emily. We're so delighted that you could come. Emily's learning and new to the board and the radio, so relatively new, which we're just delighted because you never know when things like laryngitis or other things get in the way. And this is great because we've had backup for me, but it's been hard for us to get backup for Dick because that's got the technical aspect. So, Emily, thank you for coming. And I want to give a big thank you and a big hug and a love to Michelle Cotton Laws, now known as Reverend. Particularly to congratulate her. It's not so new, but what, about a month or two?
Actually, October the 7th. So it's been 3 months. I finished my 90-day
trial.
She
got appointed as executive director for the state NAACP. And we are just so excited for you, Michelle, and excited for the NAACP because you bring so much energy and passion and brains to this. You bring so much. And I know Reverend Barber is all over the place, and I know it's great for him to have somebody like you at his side that he can count on the way I know he can count on you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
So thank you for being
here. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to serve in that capacity as well.
So. Yes. Well, and we're glad you're doing it, and we want to hear about you in this new position, about some things that the state NAACP is doing, and also your vision for where you hope things will go and how you see your role.
Great. Well, so you mentioned I am really working hand in hand, hip to hip, head to head, heart to heart with Reverend Barber. I kind of explain it this way. He's out front. He's building the movement, what I think is the most important movement today that exists around the country. I think anyone who has watched North Carolina and the Moral Monday and the Moral Movement can certainly say that we are holding up not just the South, but I think the country when it comes to keeping the moral compass as a centerpiece of the actions of our elected officials and also the policies that we make, keeping a moral compass there to help guide those decisions and reminding everyone when we are off course, when we are not doing what we should be doing in terms of making sure that we are looking out for the least of those and looking out for those that are most vulnerable, the poor, the elderly, children, women, disabled, and so forth. And so I'm very excited to serve side by side with him. I think he is a phenomenal leader for such a time as this. He certainly is, from the spiritual aspect, a prophet who is very courageous. And so I'm honored to be in that position. He does quite a bit of the movement building. We do it together, but he's really the voice of the movement, the leader, the visionary. And I'm at back at the ship nowadays. So I'm back at our state office, which is in Durham, and making sure that administratively and infrastructurally that we are sound and that we are able to keep up the pace as we grow and become what we're hoping will be the largest state conference of the NAACP in the country. Right now, we're number two. New York has us beat. We're number two, but we are the largest in the South. And so when we say building and becoming the largest state conference of the NAACP, it's not simply in numbers, but it's also in terms of impact and the work that we do in terms of fighting for civil and human rights. And so that's my vision connected with the vision of Reverend Barber's as well. That's his goal. That's what we want to do. And I'm trying to make sure that we have all of the right things in place to accommodate that kind of growth. We are so blessed and fortunate to have an amazing executive committee, Al McShirley among them, as we all know and love here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. We have the likes of Irv Joyner as our legal redress chair. So we've got some really phenomenal people that are working with us to build this state conference. We are also the most diverse state conference, and that is what I love the most. So even though historically our name says is the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, I remind everybody that we were founded in 1909, not by African Americans or blacks, but by whites who felt that the injustices that they were seeing happening in the South, making its way up at the time to Springfield, Illinois, was something that the nation could not tolerate and progress as an emerging democracy at the same time. And so so I'm excited to say that North Carolina's State Conference of the NAACP, all of our branches, and I think my branch, my local branch here at Chapel Hill and Carrboro, which you are members of, is the most diverse in the state. Although I think we have we had Haywood County, and we got some new branches that just came on board last year and the year before that came on board that emerged out of the moral movement out west that are actually 90% white. So,
oh my gosh.
So, but we still are the most diverse because we've got a nice mix, I think, in our branch of race and ethnic groups. And so,
Well, I mean, the whole Moral Monday movement of Reverend Barber has certainly given so much hope with what's the terrible things that have been happening in the state, and all of us, you know, kind of thinking, oh my gosh, we're going backwards. And I don't know where we'd be if it wasn't for Reverend Barber and the Moral Monday movement. It has given hope, and you're right about there. It has gotten national attention. It's been in some of the national magazines, and it makes you so proud that there's something positive and so wonderful coming out of this state. And I know that other states have started their own, they may not call it Moral Monday, they may have had Moral Tuesday or some other names, but they are trying to emulate what Reverend Barber has started in this state, and I guess we can hope that they'll become a national movement, a moral movement nationally. Lord knows it's needed.
And, absolutely.
Yeah.
The most exciting, one of the most exciting things for me when I first came on board was to get these calls from across the country where people were requesting either Reverend Barber or that we send a team out to show them how to replicate Moral Monday. So we got calls from Colorado. We got calls from, of course, throughout the South, southern states. We got calls throughout the Midwest, just different Kansas.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, people calling and saying, we want to do Moral Mondays here in our state. Reverend Barber just got back, and although he's on a plane again, but he just got back from Albany, New York, where they are replicating Moral Mondays. But guess what? They are having a large constituency of their elected officials who are leading it, who are saying that, you know, we cannot sit and allow unjust policies to be passed that will hurt our vulnerable and most most vulnerable members and citizens. And so it's very exciting to see how this moral message has really taken, has spread across the country, and that people are feeling that we must do something to challenge some of these egregious policies, social and political policies that are social policies and political actions that are really hurting us as a nation.
Absolutely.
And I really regretted how some of the talk got mixed in with, you know, this is class warfare, or this is, you know, an attack against one political party. As Reverend Barber reminds people, we are a nonpartisan. We don't have, and we always say we don't have any, you know, we have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests. And you remain our friends if you support the interests that we share. And that is to always, always, always take care of those that are the least of us, to always, always support our love, what we call the love and justice agenda, voting rights, labor rights, education equality, health care for all, and equal protection under the law without regard of sexual orientation or immigration status, and making sure that we have a just criminal justice system. And so if you stay, if you're on that side, if you're on the right side of those issues, then you are indeed considered a friend of the movement. And so I'm just excited that North Carolina is leading the way. And, you know, I say the best is yet to come. We are still trying to lift North Carolina to higher ground. We haven't gotten there yet, but we are certainly working with a wonderful fusion coalition of beautiful people across race and ethnic groups, across socioeconomic statuses, even across political parties, to make this happen, to advance the people's agenda.
I think people have been so hungry. There's so much cynicism, so much nothing will make any difference, you know, apathy, and the apathy comes from discouragement a lot of times. And I think that people are so hungry for that moral message that's beyond party lines or party politics. It's deeper and more important. And I think that that's part of why Reverend Barbara has just hit that chord and hunger in people's souls.
Yeah, absolutely.
To have something to say, you know, there's other people that care like I do, who want to make this a better world, not just a better party,
right,
Democrat or Republican, but a better world, and one that does care about the least of which, you know, it's in the Bible, and that Bible still is the bedrock for many of where our values come from. Whether you're a professed religion of any sort, those values are still inherent and for so
absolutely
many of us. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So there we are. You're just getting on a train that's
right. Well, I think I moved seats because I've been on the train, right?
you've been on the train for years.
I just moved seats.
That's
I've been
right
on the train for quite a long time.
I've got to mention that Michelle and I go back a long way.
Yeah.
Not too many years ago, she was the president of our local NAACP.
Yeah, the first woman. And I always say that. I always drive that. I was the first woman to lead the Chapel Hill Carborough NAACP.
Yes.
Proud of that, and proud of my wealth relationship and sisters and connection. So, yeah.
WILP folks is who bringing you this show, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We call it WILP for short. And yes, we work very closely with the NAACP and are always been proud to be a big part of it. Yeah. So then you went on a research job and came back full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm. Full steam ahead, ready. And the movement kind of just, you know, pulled me back in. I was in Virginia for a while and watching at a distance when Moral Monday started.
Mm-hmm.
And we get these text messages and stayed in touch with Reverend Barber. We always stayed in touch. He would call and give me updates, and I would watch. And I remember the election 2012, sitting, and I came home to vote early. And I remember watching election night and just sitting in horror with what was happening in North Carolina. So I knew when I returned that I would probably pick up where I left off, and that was with my fatigues on, ready to fight in social justice.
Jumped in with both feet. Full steam ahead.
And so we're in this together. And that's the beauty of it, is this belief. It's in my core. It's in, you know, everything. It's my DNA in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
From my time at UNC Chapel Hill, I did have Dr. Stone. I was there when she died. I was part of the student protest. I was not one of the leaders of that movement, but I was one of the, the mouthpieces, the communication team. You know, I was doing a local cable show.
For our listeners, you might just back up a little bit and say who Dr. Stone.
So Dr. Sonia Haynes Stone was a beloved professor of African American Studies at UNC who actually died of an aneurysm in 91. And that spurred some student activities in terms of protest, asking for a freestanding Black cultural center to be erected on UNC's campus, which is now, interestingly enough, which is now under fire again. It was on the list of institutions to close. Excuse me.
It's okay. This is cold season.
It is, and I'm just getting over one, so I do apologize.
Yeah. Do you have another cough drop, Dick?
So I was part of that first student body that fought to have that center erected. And it breaks my heart to know that it's on the list for closure. And so I'm asking anyone who's listening to join the fight. That, along with the Civil Rights Center that Julius Chambers started, that Mark Dorison is over now. And so it's amazing the Women's Center. Excuse me, at UNC.
The Poverty Center,
Jean Nichols Center. So it's interesting, the ones that were chosen. I'm not going to get into what I think is going on behind that, but interesting, the ones that were chosen for, to be investigated and that are now fighting to prove their worthiness in terms of staying open as a as a value to the educational process at within the UNC school system. And so for some of us, it's a no-brainer. How are they not? Right.
Yes.
So I think that's the better question, is to how can you explain how they aren't contributing in a very significant way to a quality, high quality education of students and as well as faculty and patrons of our university system. So anyway, I've been doing this for a while. and
you grew up here?
I grew up here, was born and reared in Chapel Hill. Born at what was called Memorial Hospital, so Memorial part of UNC Hospital. And family all here where we are, up and down this area, Merritt Mill Road, Rogers.
Where I now live.
Where you now live, and then Rogers Road and Pritchard Extension.
Yeah.
And so went to school here. Someone asked me the other day, I met them in Raleigh, and they said, did you go to East Chapel Hill High or Chapel Hill High? I said, well, when I was growing up and in high school, there was only one high school, and that was Chapel Hill High. And there were only two, what we called junior highs. They're now middle schools, and that was Phillips and Colberth, and I went to Phillips. And for elementary school, went to Estes Hills and Sewell. So
you're a native of both Chapel Hill and the state.
Native, born and bred. Love Chapel Hill. Love it. Love. We'll continue to fight. It's changed quite a bit, and there's this nostalgia for the past in terms of the sense of community. But still willing to fight to hold on to the remnants of that we still have, and there are some. I think we've got some really good leadership, and particularly in Lydia Lavelle in Carrboro. I think her vision is right on target for this area. Can't say enough about her, and of course Mark
Dorison,
who's
one
done.
Of our county commissioners.
And so I'm excited about
there's still some very good folks here.
There's still some good folks, and Maria Palmer at on the Chapel Hill Town Council.
So you grew up in a good place. It wasn't perfect, a lot of problems, but still enough good stuff that you can feel good about it. And even with the current problems we're having with the increased disparity. Mm-hmm. It's right here in our in our town, the increased wealth disparity that we've been talking about in the state and the nation. It's right here.
Right.
And it's painful to see.
Yeah, it's painful to see how it is manifesting, because there's always been this huge gap between the wealthy or the affluent and the working class in Chapel Hill. And I have to remind people of that. Mm-hmm. I came out of that community that that, you know, my family members were the service workers. They were the nannies and the domestic workers. And so but there was this sense that this was all of our community, and that we all were very valuable and significant members of it. And so, you know, when people say, you know, there's this, it's changed, it's become more affluent, I'm not sure how much more affluent, but I think there's a different type of people living here that are affluent, that have relocated here, that are bringing values and beliefs that are not like those of those who were affluent when I grew up here.
Okay.
And so that's, I think that there's a different politics that's emerging, where it's, you know, a fend for yourself and, you know, let those who have get more, and those who don't fight for whatever they can get.
Yeah.
And so I do think that we're seeing that. And it breaks my heart when I think about the housing crisis and, you know, this disdain for persons who are on Section 8, for example, when we're talking about firefighters, we're talking about our, you know, emergency service workers, we're talking about our teachers' assistants, we're talking in some instances about our teachers. And so this belief that those who utilize public services and assistance are somehow unworthy of living in this community and partaking of all the wonderful things that Chapel Hill and Carver have to offer is, one, ludicrous, and it's also very disheartening and disturbing on so many levels. And so so I still fight. I fight because I have family here. I fight because we have property here. And I fight in terms of our family. And I fight because I care about the place of my birth. This is my home. This is where I was born. And you know, I think all of us should really do an assessment of not how much are we willing to fight for ourselves, but how much are we willing to fight to make the community that we all live in an enjoyable place for everyone? Because there, Lord knows, there is more than enough to share and to go around.
Well, and I think what you're saying, that there's always been some disparity, but that has increased, and that also there is a meaner spirit
absolutely
than what had been here before.
Right.
And before, I just know with having a lot of family members, that there was always some places you could find that maybe were not as up to date, but you could find some reasonably affordable places to live. Mm-hmm. And they more and more have gentrified them, even like Old Well. Mm-hmm. It's changed names 3 times, and that's one of the places that is now saying they won't take Section 8. Mm-hmm. You know, that they have gentrified places that have been counted on to be reasonably affordable for people, and it's made it harsher and more difficult, and a less diverse community.
Absolutely.
It's pushing people out, and you're right, that some of the people who serve here, teachers, firemen, all kinds of people, having to then move to Durham, or some as far away as the hospital, some as far away as Roxborough, or, you know, Alamance County, because it's so harder and harder to find a place to live here.
And I say, for some people, you know, because I get the idea, I get the impression sometimes that some people's who are benefactors of affluence, whether that is through their hard work, or whether that is through inheritance, or whether that is through being born in the right family and having access. And I don't knock it by any means. God has blessed me to move from the level of where the social status that I grew up in. And so all of us should achieve and should strive to reach a level of success that makes us comfortable, that we're comfortable with. But I have a problem when people have this sense of entitlement.
Yes.
And just total disregard for those who are struggling.
Yes.
And who will look at someone else in this community who may not have as much as they have in terms of resources or even opportunities, as if they are a burden or a problem.
Yes.
And that gets me. If you really want to get me out on the front lines fighting and doing all I can, treat those who are struggling as if they are not as important as those who are not. And you've got someone. I think I'm a little Chihuahua dog on somebody's leg then, because I say that in terms of school and in the schools. It breaks my heart to hear some of the stories about from parents about how their kids are treated or about how they are treated in this school district. And I know it can be very difficult because it is a very affluent school district, so that we're trying to turn into a private school district. But it, until that actually happens, it is still a public school system. And we have to recognize that we have kids that are across the socioeconomic strata who we have a responsibility to educate in the same and provide the same outcomes for.
Michelle, we're going to come back to that, particularly on the schools, but we're going to take a station break right now. And I just want to say what we're talking about, and you're growing up in this community, is a microcosm of what we're talking about is happening across the state and
Absolutely.
Across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making it personal because the personal is political. Mm-hmm. And this is, in a nutshell, what we see here is what is causing so many problems
Absolutely.
Across this whole country. Okay. We're going to take a station break.
You're listening to WILF, Wake Up Call, 103.5 FM. Wake Up Call is underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, which is located now on Lloyd Street in Carrboro. If you're having difficulty, you can stream us live on WCOMFM.org. I have one announcement, and that is, on February 24th, there will be a conversation on race and economic disparity. It will be held at the Durham Public Library, Durham Public Library, from 6:30 to 8:30. Refreshments will be served, and it is presented by Southern Anti-Racism Network.
Okay, thank you so much. So let's give that date again, because this is something that Dick works really hard with this group, besides working really hard mm-hmm. with WILF and the NAACP mm-hmm. and many, many things. But this is another one of his hardworking groups.
It is on Tuesday, February 24th.
So February 24th. Let's not get it mixed up with January. We'll have maybe really push that as we get into February. Okay.
Durham Public Library.
Yes. I didn't want somebody going there January 24th and saying, where the heck are you? So
February.
Yeah, so we got to remind people a little bit later on, too. And the Internationalist Books is having, we've talked about each week how they've moved right across the street from the radio station on Lloyd Street. They're the second doorway in from Main Street, and it's their new digs, and they do have some parking, and it's a real improvement, and they're real happy about it. So they're having an open house on, I think it's January 22nd. I'm looking at Dick with question mark. I think it's January 22nd, I'm pretty sure. They're having an open house, and I think it's at 5:00. And I have it written down, but I brought my new book, and I don't have it in this book. I don't think so. So let's hope I got that straight. But you can always call to check on it. But
check the website.
Check their website, the Internationalist Books and Community Center .org, I guess. And we'd love them. They have the best bumper stickers. They've got books. But one of their big things is that they are a community center where a lot of young people can go, particularly young people. And they're doing stuff with teenagers, which is really wonderful, getting teenagers involved and finding a community of acceptance. So that's That's the station break. I just want to give a shout out. I hope my grandson is listening. I told him to stream us live. And hey, Matthew. And I think your son, we're hoping Chris is listening.
Hi, Chris.
Okay. Okay, back to Michelle Laws, who is a dear and old friend from back when she was the president of our local NAACP. And now she's in her new position, relatively new, as executive director of the state NAACP, working right heart-to-heart and hip-to-hip with Reverend Barber in building a movement, trying to build a moral movement to get this state turned around back to where it was before, but better than that even. We've gone backwards, and we kind of long for what we thought was some good things about this state, but we've got to even move beyond that. So, and building a movement, we hope, that's moving across the country.
It absolutely is. So
that is so exciting.
It is very exciting, very exciting. So part of what we're doing, I just want to say before we forget, is February the 14th.
Yes.
You know, we will actually assemble again in Raleigh for the 9th annual Forward Together Movement Mass Moral March on Raleigh and HK on J People's Assembly. And so I'm hoping that all of our old friends and partners, and those who are new friends and partners, and those who just want to see how we do this in a phenomenal way, a huge way, mobilizing people from all across the state, and even it tapping into the interest and participation of people from outside of the state. But it's largely the North Carolina's mass people's movement. And you can think of it as one Moral Monday amplified by 10 times.
Yeah, last year was huge.
Yes, last year we had over almost 100,000 people. And so we are very excited because we have people that are still eager and still ready and who are still hopeful. And you know, after the elections, these midterm elections, we got questions from the media asking, well, do you anticipate that this HK on J will still spark the interest of that many people? Now, we don't know how many will show up on February the 14th, but our position is we weren't working for any one particular party or candidate, and so that needs to be very clear.
Yeah.
We were working for the people, and as long as there are elected officials on either side that are still refusing to expand Medicaid in the state, refusing to give teachers a real pay raise, mm-hmm. refusing to protect public schools, refusing to protect the rights of everyone from our LGBTQ community to immigrants, refusing to provide an education and a high quality sound education for all children, refusing to raise the minimum wage and understand that we are indeed in an economic war, then we still have a fight. And so it wasn't contingent upon whether one candidate or another, Hagan or Tillis, we'll use them as an example. We still have a people's agenda that we've got to push and that we've got to continue to fight to get advanced and passed in many ways. We have a racial justice fight in terms of the criminal justice system.
Oh, boy.
We need to go back to the request to appeal the death penalty in North Carolina, mm-hmm. Repeal the death penalty, to abolish the death penalty, and to restore the Racial Justice Act because it was repealed.
Yes.
And so there's still a fight. And it doesn't matter who's in Washington. It doesn't matter who's in Raleigh. Unless they are passing legislation and social policies that lift us all up in North Carolina, everybody needs to be in Raleigh on February the 14th for, again, another mass demonstration by the people, the 9th annual mass mobilization and HK on J People's Assembly. Now, the pre-rally will begin at 9 a.m. and we're going to gather across the street from the Raleigh Memorial Auditorium. That's at 2 East East South Street. And then the march will begin, and we'll go straight down Fayetteville onto the state capitol, where we have speakers and singers and just a wonderful showing of diverse faiths. So we've got an imam, we've got a rabbi, we've got ministers from the Protestant faith. We have young people. We have members from the Hispanic and Latino community. We have members from the Native American community, and we don't often talk about them, but their plight and their fight is intertwined and interconnected. And so we're just excited about the growth and about the moral appeal and referendum that the people are declaring and continuing to demand. And so we're excited about that. That week before, leading up to HK on J, we will have various demonstrations, various teach-ins, sit-ins, and at the General Assembly. And one day, for example, it's going to be all youth that will be there. All of our youth and college divisions of the NAACP, youth organizations from local colleges and universities, and some not so local. So one, they have a day. Then we have artists who have come out of the moral movement, who will be delivering spoken word, songs, art, doing their artistic craft, showing their talents in a very powerful way, using their talents in a very powerful way for social justice and change. And then we have doctors, medical, so health professionals and so forth. So that week leading up is something different that we're going to try this year that I'm very excited about, that people have kind of just signed on to and said that they wanted to kind of, it reminds me of, it was a movie I remember seeing in terms of, it was about the, Native American community losing its land, and it started, and they had this elder in the community who started beating this drum, and the drum was very light at first, so you just heard, in the background this light sound, and then as the movie progressed, the sound kept getting louder and louder and louder and louder and louder and louder, and then by the end, he had mobilized, he had convened all of the people from the tribe who had traveled and who were coming back and who were still traveling. And so I think of that week kind of being the drum, the beating of the drum.
Slowly building up
to this beautiful demonstration and mobilization on Saturday, Valentine's Day. And our theme for this General Assembly, this legislative session, we are passing out hearts. And some hearts will have holes in them, which we're hoping we won't have to give too many of those. But we're asking, that this is a love thing. And Dr. King talks so much, Selma is showing in theaters. And Dr. King spoke a lot about love, and before his untimely death, his last book was Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community? And in the last chapter, he talks about this beloved community, and we know we have the beloved community in Greensboro. So this is a love thing. It keeps and for me, it keeps me connected to humanity. It reminds me that I'm no better or less than any other person, regardless of my race or ethnicity or my gender, where I'm from. I used to tell people that when I went, my mother lived in Newark for a while, and I lived there for 3 years out of my life. So I didn't go through all of my elementary school here. I must confess, I was in Newark, New Jersey, and she was at Rutgers. In night school. And so, but I remember moving up there from the South, and I was there from third grade through sixth grade, third, fourth, and fifth, and then came back for Phillips, seventh, eighth, and ninth. So, at any rate, I remember feeling so, left out and so discriminated against, not because of my color, because we lived in a wonderful community that was mixed with Puerto Ricans and blacks, and they all mixed in together, and it was really a beautiful experience. But because the way I talked, they used to taunt and tease me
because of the Southern.
And I remember just feeling so ashamed and so bad. And you know, so I always, for some reason, never liked that. Well, obviously, for the reason, never liked that feeling. But as a child, when I hung out with groups that were bullies, I remembered how I felt when I was bullied because I was different or what have you. And so I'm hoping that we all acknowledge that we're different. We're different. Of course we're different. That makes us beautiful. That makes us wonderful. But also know what it feels like for someone to use that difference in a very negative and nasty and mean-spirited way and decide to be on the other side of that. And fight for those who are enduring that every day because of their race, because of their ethnicity, or because of their gender or sexual orientation, or because of their socioeconomic status, because they don't have enough or they don't have the same amount. And so when we understand that we all have to fight those evils.
Absolutely.
And it's you have to decide which side are you on. You're on one side or the other.
And I think, and I dated back to since Reagan is when I noticed that the selfishness became cool, you know, and people weren't ashamed to talk about wanting money and lots of money, which is, like, you're right. It's okay to want to be comfortable, but I think it seems to be at the point where the poor are looked down upon in a way I do not recall. It was always like through churches or whatever, you wanted to care for the poor, and now it's like something's wrong with them that they don't pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Right. And as it becomes increasingly difficult to move up in terms of getting into the middle class, we're getting more and more harsh,
right?
With anybody who, yeah. It's like something's wrong with them that they're not making it,
It's the myth of meritocracy,
yeah.
Right? The Horatio Alger myth.
It's
the myth, right? That you get to the top through hard work and some unique talent that you have, right?
Yeah.
And I recommend when people start talking that way, Malcolm Gladwell, one of my favorite books of all time is Outlier by Malcolm Gladwell.
And
he talks about this notion, you know, that those who are the wealthiest in our country are the ones who really worked hard. Well, first of all, many of them inherited it, or they came from families that were comfortable enough where all they needed to do was to focus on honing their craft and their skill. And if I came from a family where all I needed to do was to focus on just being whatever in the world I wanted to be, I didn't have to worry about working a summer job. I didn't have to worry about my, you know, whether or not the lights were going to be on. I didn't have to feel as a child that anxiety of my parents or my grandparents when Christmas was coming around and nothing was under the tree and it was December 22nd
or when it's a harsh winter, and so forth and so on.
So I tell people, you know, think about not that you should feel sorry or feel bad that you have your affluence or that you are in a position that you are in to take care of you, but don't think that that gives you privilege to look down on others who don't. In fact, I'm of a believer, and my faith belief teaches me to whom much is given, much is required, and that when we have, we give. And as Dr. Maya Angelou said, when we know, we teach, right? And when we learn, we teach. And so that's how I was raised. And so people who call themselves Christians in particular, who don't understand that we are required to take care of the least. We are not required to for some reason teach them a lesson because, you know, teach them what about hard work or teach them that, no, if you don't work, a man won't eat. No, some people are born into situations that make it very, very difficult to move out of their socioeconomic status.
And wages have become very stagnant. You took one salary.
Right.
And you could have a family, you know, could have a job, could have health care,
exactly.
and you wouldn't live high in the hog, but you could be okay.
Right.
And now it takes two salaries, and sometimes each of them has to work, or one or both work two jobs.
Right.
Because the wages, how many times are they keeping, I've heard over and over again, they're keeping, even what should be, there's a company here that does, well, never mind. They make something like false legs or appendages like that, and they keep everybody part-time. It's a relatively skilled job.
Yeah, so they don't have to pay health insurance.
So they don't have to pay health insurance.
They don't have to pay the benefits and so forth. And to me, that's just, you know, when companies start making these profits that are, you know, that really indicates to me that it's more it becomes more of an issue of greed than need, right? And that they're willing to sacrifice bringing their employers up to a good, decent quality of living or standard of living because they need one more yacht or they need one more, you know, they need to, you know, to amass one more, you know, billion, you know, however much money.
They get competitive.
They get competitive, you know, millions of dollars is not enough. They are going for the billion, but yet though they're living very comfortably. And also on the environmental side, because my family knows that I am a staunch environmentalist. I believe in protecting Mother Earth because she's protecting us. We breathe the air because Mother Earth continues to produce oxygen despite, you know, our polluting of it. And so, so the other part is, you know, do we need to build another high-rise building at the expense of green space? You know, there are questions that I think we need to sit down and really assess in our country and even in our city here in Chapel Hill, and in Carver as well. Do we, what are we willing to sacrifice? And I used to love the landscape of Chapel Hill. Now there is not really nothing aesthetically pleasing or nice looking about Franklin Street or about Chapel Hill. I'm sorry. Maybe from an aerial view, I haven't taken an aerial view in an airplane or a helicopter to see, but I know on the ground, there's nothing attractive about it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's really disturbing because at what cost, right? What, I'm not really sure what the end game is and what the end goal is.
Well, they say because land is getting in shortage that you have to go up. But unfortunately, when they go up, when the town owned that piece of land where the parking lot was up on West Franklin Street, so the town owned that land. So, okay, if you're going to go up, why not have that be affordable apartments? And instead, it's penthouses.
Right. Yeah, and so that's exactly what I'm getting. So I don't know what our end game is. Other than is it to help those who have much amass more and the hell with the others, sorry, or is it you know, what is it? Is it to create this beloved community?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, it's looking more and more like the first part, in that we are catering to the greed of those who already have consumed and have amassed so much and utilized and exploited so many of our resources. And that's scary. And I'm not really sure what kind of society we're becoming if we can sustain this kind of inequality for very long. All empires that tried it, I have to just say, and this is not me, but this is historical facts. Have fallen.
That's right.
And we have to be mindful of that.
When
I don't know why we think that we are so exempt. And I think about this whole ISIS and what's going on in the Middle East and how we're becoming, you know, more and more vulnerable, as well as our allies in the West and along with us, you know. And I as much as it pains me, the senseless murders and terrorist attacks, you know, we have woven a very, very dangerous.
Well,
you know,
we started with the unnecessary war in Iraq, and we've upset the apple cart.
Right.
And I remember somebody, I remember that at the time, because I was so opposed to that war that somebody said to Bush, some advisor, maybe Colin Powell, one of them, if you go in there, if it doesn't work, you know, it's on you. You break it. And it's going to be going on for generations.
And it is.
We're reaping the world.
We're reaping what we sow. You know, and we went in a very deceptive way. So that's what I was trying to get at. You know, the saying from one of the Greek mythology, oh, what dangerous webs we weave when we set out to deceive. And we've woven a very dangerous web. And we are seeing it, the manifestation of it. We're seeing products of that. And so there's a lot of work to do. I encourage everyone to get involved in the local NAACP. I am speaking on Saturday, this coming Saturday, for the Martin Luther King banquet in Orange County. And then we know UNC, of course, in partnership with the local community, has the Martin Luther King banquet at UNC, which starts at 6 o'clock on the Friday Center. You can go on their website to get information on that. But then on that Monday, we will have our march from Freedom and Justice Plaza to
the Raging Grannies. Will be singing.
Raging
getting
Grannies
there at 9 o'clock on a cold morning.
9 o'clock on a cold morning, but we have done it so many times before.
We have done it.
And so, and Vimala always with Curry, Vimala's Curry Blossom always has been so kind. I hope she does it again if you're listening, Vimala, with her hot chai tea. That's become one of my favorite things, because right when we get there, we're like, yes. But so we invite everyone to come to First Baptist Church.
And then the church is at 11. We'll march from the rally to the church. If you don't or can't march, come to the church at 11, First Baptist on Roberson Street. Mm-hmm. And it's our traditional time there. And I forget who's going to be the speaker. But
well, Dr. Reverend Rodney Coleman.
Oh, right.
Who is the new pastor of First Baptist, who is great. And I'm so excited. We're working together on a few things.
Okay.
And so he is definitely involved in the movement and a man of vision. So I can't think of a better person to take over from Reverend Dr. J.R. Manley.
No.
To take over the helm of that very important and historic church here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah. Okay. So, and before we go, I don't know how our time is, but I just want us to, we got time. I just don't want us to forget about HKNJ, because we're building up to that, and that's going to be our 9th year. Mm-hmm. And last year was a doozy, coming out of the Moral Monday movement, and it was absolutely huge. But however big it is or whatever size, please be there, because it's always a good, good thing to go to.
There are buses coming from, I think, the the buses coming from Chapel Hill. So I think the Universalist Church, one of the churches has a bus. So I guess that information is also on Chapel Hill Carborough's website.
We'll be putting out more information about what websites to go to. I think the NAACP is planning some buses. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times their buses, last time we met at the parking lot at United Church of Chapel Hill, but I think also the Community Church, Unitarian Universalists, I think they had a bus or two themselves. So there'll be various ways to get there. Going by bus is really nice, because you have that camaraderie and group spirit, and you don't have to worry about parking and all of that. So we still have a little bit of time. Is there anything that we are leaving out, or we could always play some music too?
Well, I just want to say thank you. It's always a pleasure
at
this time. It goes so quickly. Just know that anytime you want me as a guest, I will make myself available. I missed that first one, and that was just crazy time. I don't even know why I had that.
It was right when you were getting started in your new job, and I'm sure there was all kinds of pressures going on.
And I want to say that we are having our humanitarian banquet on next Saturday, the 24th, in Raleigh. at Abundant Life Center. And I'm excited about that because we are honoring Shaw University under the leadership of Dr. Gaddis Falcon. Shaw is 150 years old. Shaw is the birthplace of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the planning ground for more for Freedom Summer, the planning ground for a lot of the student activism that you see in the movie Selma, you know, was born out of, well, we talk about Lewis and all of those, but a lot of the initial groundwork was laid at Shaw University. And so we are so honored because they have remained at the forefront and trailblazers in terms of educating and nurturing and training student activists. And so we are very honored.
Who does the humanitarian award? Is
that North Carolina NAACP. So it's NAACP.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So your local branch has tickets, or you can online to www.naacpnc.org. Again, it's www.naacpnc.org to get tickets, please, and also information on how you can place an ad to congratulate Shaw, and not just Shaw University, but we're also honoring with the McLean Award for service the fast food workers of North Carolina. So raise up, and so we are so excited and just so glad that we will also be giving them an award that same night. So
wonderful.
If you want to say congratulations to Raise Up or the fast food workers, support them, take out an ad, please go to the North Carolina NAACP.org's website and get the information there, and we hope to see you.
Okay, so it's not too late to get an ad.
It's not too late to get an ad.
So we've got to look into that, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So that's next Saturday.
Heard of that. It should have been announced at the local meeting, but yes. Because it's also the mandatory training for the officers that day, earlier that day. North Carolina NAACP officers.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's...
For the local branches.
And then on that Sunday, the 18th, Reverend Barber is going to be over at Duke University.
Well, so this is the 24th.
This is the 24th, mm-hmm,
But Reverend Barber will be at Duke at 3 at Duke Chapel.
At the 18th.
Right.
On the 18th, mm-hmm. that Sunday
yep,
afternoon.
That's exactly right.
That's also free.
Yep.
And then you were going to be...
And I will be that Saturday in Orange County at Mount Bright Church, I believe it. I can't remember which church. Or as their keynote Martin Luther King speaker for the county.
Okay.
And you can go online and or Google it, Orange County Martin Luther King Banquet, Orange County, North Carolina. So I'll be in Hillsborough on that Saturday. And then that Sunday at 10, I will be in Durham at Covenant Presbyterian Church, Reverend Jimmy Hawkins, one of the Moral Monday arrestees.
Okay, boy, there's a lot going on.
It's a lot
going
on.
It's building up already.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if it weren't Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Yeah. And there is a book out that I heard Tavis Smiley talking on this radio station one of the mornings about the last year of Martin Luther King's life. That was a year when he...
The
call what? Death of a
King? Death of a
King. Death of a King. And... You have a... Oh, wow. When you finished, if I could borrow it. Because he says about how that last year, after he gave that, a year before he died, that speech at Riverside Church, coming out against the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
That he got castigated by...
He did.
Everybody.
Everybody, including the NAACP.
Including the NAACP.
Which is not a proud part of our history.
No. Including his own people in the churches,
the black clergy. And so, you know, Reverend Barber always says, and I've also heard Cornel West and some others say, that if everybody who's saying today that they stood with King and marched with King really had stood and marched with King, that it would have been, you know, we would have completed the people's, poor people's campaign. We would have completed. The reality is, during that time, he was very much polarized and ostracized even, and
it was terrible.
And he also dealt with a severe bout of he was also depressed.
Very depressed.
And he dealt with migraine headaches. As a matter of fact, he wasn't going to go out and speak the night before to the sanitation workers because he had had a really bad migraine headache. And aren't we glad that he pushed through that and went anyway?
Well, we're about to say goodbye. We're so delighted to have Michelle Cotton Laws with us, and new executive director of the state NAACP, and we'll be talking more about HKNJ coming up, and we'll be here next week. Yeah.